This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. It was estimated that nearly 12 million children in America lived in poverty. One in six children lived in food insecure households. Black and brown children disproportionately affected by poverty in the United States. And those stats are from before the pandemic shut down large parts of the U.S. economy. A new documentary titled Growing Up Poor in America premieres tonight at 9 on PBS's Frontline series and on WOSU-TV. The film follows three Ohio families struggling to make ends meet amid the added chaos from the pandemic, told from the perspectives of the kids themselves.
I think anyone can end up how we are, being homeless.
When I get older, I would want to live here. I want to get a good, stable job.
Sometimes life just happens and things go the wrong way.
Growing Up Poor in America was shot and directed by award-winning filmmaker Jeze Newman. It's a sequel of sorts to his 2012 Frontline film titled Poor Kids. Jeze Newman, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're talking about poverty in America through the eyes of children. Jeze, why tell this story through kids?
I think that with poverty comes a lot of stigmas and preconceptions, and often people in poverty are demonized. And I think that through children, you're able to have a more level playing field because, you know, you can't blame these kids for the situation they're in. You know, you could try to lay blame on the parents for the choices they've made, but the kids have no choice. And also, I think that often we listen to kids, but we don't really hear them. I'm a parent myself, and I'm guilty of this. You know, we're just so busy parenting, or teachers are teaching, and we never give them an opportunity just to sit there and tell us exactly what they think and afford that time. And often when you do, they're really revealing. And the thing about kids is they don't have filters, so you get some true honesty through them as well.
Yeah, the stars of, we'll get to the stories in a moment in your documentary, but the so-called stars, I guess you could call them, of your documentary are 13, mm-hmm. 14, and 12. Those age kids are old enough to know what's going on, but still young enough to have hope and not be cynical and things like that. Is that what you found during your filmmaking as you profiled these families?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing with kids is that we're talking to children that are still at an age that's just, it's not too late yet. You know, things can change for these children if things are put in place that can help them, you know, in terms of education, in terms of opportunity. And so I think, yes, they still do have an optimism within their world. And also, I think the downside is that they also carry an awful lot of baggage in terms of anxiety towards their parents' well-being. And all the kids talk about how much they worry about their mothers. So I think there's that sort of mix of opportunity, can see a future, but at the same time, internal worries about the situation they're in now.
They're older than their years would indicate because of this situation that they find themselves in. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would totally agree. Yes, they're having to often help mum look after. You know, it just so happens in this film we have three single mothers, which is also, if you look at the stats in poverty, there's a high percentage of single mums. Us guys don't have a great track record. So I think that, you know, you'll see the kids, the elder siblings often have to sort of step in and be a dad or be a, you know, an extra mum, you know, because the mothers are having to be both fathers and mothers to these children. So, of course, they grow up quicker than they should. In fact, I went to see Kaya and her sister and her mum yesterday, and we happened to stop. We wanted to have some food together, and there was a playground, and watching Kaya and Kalia on the swings, laughing and giggling and being kids. And you just think how tragic it is that this so really happens for them.
Let's start with that family. 14-year-old Kaya, her mother is Becky, and they're from Columbus, correct? What's their story?
Yeah, they're from Columbus. Becky, the mum, never finished school, so you know, her sort of employment opportunities are already more limited. So she's done a lot of jobs through agencies. So they're often temporary jobs. So she's been in and out of work. She's tried a hand at trying to make money in other ways. And basically she got to a situation where she just couldn't afford the rent of the apartment they were living in, and so took the decision, you know, that she couldn't renew the lease. This is a term that sometimes you hear bounded about called intentionally homeless. But basically the reason for doing that is because if she actually hung on there and got evicted, this would count against her in the future in quite a significant way. So often what people do is they'll just not really renew their lease and they'll just go to the streets, and then they're relying on friends and family to help them. And obviously if they don't have friends and family, or they're from out of state, then you'll find them on the streets. If they do have friends and family who are open enough to take them in for a while, then they become part of what's known as the hidden homeless or invisible homeless.
And that's what this family did. They went into a family's house. Yeah. They're living with a relative of Becky, the mom.
Yeah, absolutely. But obviously that puts strains. That puts strains on the family that's welcomed them in. That's put strains on the family that's living there. You know, it's not an ideal situation because, you know, I don't know if any of your listeners have had somebody come to stay for a while, but we always say, you know, 3 or 4 days is great. Pushing to a week to 10 days and you kind of want your space back, you know.
Yeah.
No, We're talking about months here. Yes. Months here. You know?
I am fortunate, and then I don't have to face the situation this family does. But it's an adjustment just having your college age kids come home for the summertime. Can you imagine a whole entire family coming in and having to put strains on your living situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's little things that you don't really think about, like sharing a shower, getting ready for work, you know, you getting off to school. It's all these things that is like an additional strain, you know. And obviously the family themselves are, they're not choosing to be there. It's not like they're thinking, oh, this is great, we can just live in this one room forever together. You know, it's not an ideal situation for anybody. Mm-hmm. And but the other option would be the streets or a shelter. And obviously shelters are also straining with the burden of the homeless. You know, I know a lot of shelters are, you know, I worked with some shelters while making this project, and we had a very close relationship with the shelter in Cincinnati. And, you know, they're getting calls daily, you know. So it's not like, you know, shelter places are easily come by either. I know that in Columbus, all the organizations working within the shelter system there are trying desperately to make sure that every family gets a place and no kids end up on the street. But obviously that's a real struggle. And if evictions do eventually come to fruition off the back of the pandemic, then, you know, who knows how many other people are going to end up like Carr and her family.
We're talking about poverty through the eyes of children. Jezza Newman is an award-winning filmmaker. His most recent documentary, Growing Up Poor in America, premieres tonight on WOSU-TV as part of the PBS series Frontline. When did you start producing this documentary? I take it was before we even knew what coronavirus and COVID-19 was.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd started originally to make the film at the tail end of last year. That's when I first started researching it and got a team together with Lauren and Maddie, who worked with me on this, and then Brooke came in later. But basically, we also had some other people in, and we were looking in Detroit, we were looking in Wisconsin, we were looking in Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, and we're just trying to look at, you know, where poverty in swing states and sort of look at poverty leading up to the election. And then I arrived here on the 5th of March for a 2-week shoot, but then coronavirus hit big time in the US. A travel ban was put on the UK. And so I had a choice, either stay here for 6 months and make the film or go home. So I stayed.
So when you started this film, the tail end of 2019, you know, the economy was doing pretty well for many of us. And you were trying to tell a story of poverty, even though the stock market was really high, corporate profits were way up, incomes were up. but it wasn't obviously affecting every family. The good economy, and then the pandemic hit, and that hit the lower income folks even more because the restaurants shut down, bars shut down, service industries like hotels and things like that, they shut down, and all those folks are out of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, which is why you see the vast numbers of cars that were collating at food distribution outlets at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, here in Southeast Ohio, one of the families in the Plains, in Athens County, and this is had huge numbers of food insecurity prior to the pandemic. You know, food pantries were already working at, full on, and the food distribution was full on. And so when the pandemic hit, this was even worse, because like you say, there's a greater divide in America, where actually far less people live in the middle class section of society. It's much more lower middle class and people or the rich. And so a lot of people in a lot of areas are relying on service industry or all the jobs that were the ones to go first. And so suddenly you've got a raft of people who don't have any work. And so therefore, they're not only having to worry about how they pay their rent and how to pay their electric, but also how to put food on the table.
Yeah, you tell the story of 13-year-old Sean. His mom, Crystal, works at the Salvation Army, and she's bringing home $885 a month, and that includes food stamps. And that's just not a lot of money. And if anything goes wrong, they're really, in a fix.
Yeah, and I think, again, when we make these films, part of it is also to sort of break down those preconceptions and stereotypes that people like to put on the poor. The poor are lazy, the poor are, don't care, and they just want to take money. Well, actually that's not true, and I think Crystal's story really highlights that, because she actually works for her benefits. So she's not just given benefits and lies around on the couch all day. She actually works at the Salvation Army food distribution and stayed working through coronavirus. And at the beginning of the pandemic, she didn't know whether she would actually lose her benefits if she was, if she had to forced to go home because they had to shut down, and would she lose them or not? As it transpires, they didn't, but she still chose to work because that's her ethic. She felt she needed to be there for society. And I think there's a lot of people like Crystal out there. I mean, there are other people at the Salvation Army shelter who I met who were what they call working off hours. And I think that's important to get across to people that just because they're on benefits, that doesn't mean they don't have a work ethic. But yet they're living on next to nothing, and like you say, all you need is for a washing machine to break down, or in Crystal's case, her car broke down, so she no longer had transportation, and yet in America, most people take for granted a car. It's almost like your third leg.
Yeah, there's no public transportation in Southeast Ohio, at least not to the extent that there is in bigger cities. I mean, even in Columbus, public transportation can be a challenge for folks who have to commute to their jobs. Sometimes it's hour and a half each way on the bus system. 13-year-old Sean is Crystal's son. He not only faces the anxiety of, poverty, but he's worried his mom will catch the virus.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, she's still there. I'm taking food boxes to cars. There's still lots of talk about, no one's come up with a concrete, answer to whether how easily you can catch it off surfaces and things. So, of course, she's touching the trunk of the car that the person has touched. She's, having to speak to people, and they put in safety precautions and they wear masks and they sanitize and all of that. But obviously there's always a risk, and so that plays on Sean's mind.
We're talking with Jesse Newman. He's an award-winning filmmaker. His most recent documentary is Growing Up Poor in America. It premieres tonight on PBS and WOSU-TV. It's part of the Frontline series. Catch it at 9 o'clock this evening on WOSU-TV. When we come back, we'll take a closer look at poverty in Ohio, poverty in Central Ohio, through the eyes of children here on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. More than half the children in 9 Ohio cities live in poverty, and nearly 40 other Ohio towns have child poverty rates of at least 30%. And that was before the COVID-19 pandemic. The realities of COVID-19 have amplified the hardships of low-income families struggling to make ends meet. That's the topic of a new documentary preparing tonight on WOSU-TV. It's a Frontline documentary titled Growing Up Poor in America. Still with us is the film's director, Jezza Newman. And now joining us is Dr. Ray Bignall, a physician at Nationwide Children's Hospital. His academic interests include social determinants of health, population health, and health disparities. Dr. Bignall, welcome to All Sides. Dr. Bignall, are you there? Okay. Also with us, hopefully, is Tracy Najeda. She is with us. She's a executive director of the Children's Defense Fund of Ohio. Tracy, are you there? Well, Jezza, it's just you and me. We'll try to get the other two folks on as soon as we can. Jezza Newman is an award-winning filmmaker. He's made his film Growing Up Poor in America premieres tonight on PBS and WOSU-TV at 9. Let's get back to your documentary as well. The issue of race, of course, is front and center in this country in the past few months. Describe how race plays a role in your documentary.
Yeah, sure. I mean, race plays a role in terms of poverty because two of the families are Black American, and well, one is Black, one is mixed race, and they have experience of situations where they felt that they were treated differently because of their race. They're also aware, you know, the kids have had it at school. On a sort of school level, you know, comments here, comments there, but it's the sort of beginnings of, the beginnings of racism, I guess. But, you know, for the kids, it's very much about, you know, looking at the situation they're in as well, but looking at the situation their mother, their grandmother has been in, and really looking at, you know, how this can be addressed for change. So for the kids, it's very much about having a voice, talking about how they feel, the situations they've been, and how can things change in the future.
Did you film
we filmed, you know, sorry.
Go ahead, finish up.
So we filmed two of the, both of the, these teams, one was Sean and his brother Edward, and then Karen Clear, when they attended protests in downtown, well, for Clear and Kyle, it was downtown Columbus. And they went to, you know, peaceful protests that were appropriate for their age and what they would, you know, and the fact that they were just trying to be young people discovering a voice and talking about things that they felt were important. And then with Sean, it was very much, that was probably more motivated by his mother, but she was obviously seeing that he was growing up to be a Black male in society, and these things do happen. And so it's just, how do you address these? How do you change the situations they're in. So he went along to a protest as well. And then she talked about how she had changed as a person, how she had been brought up with a more racist outlook on life and had changed through life experiences for her, which was fortuitous, but therefore knows that you can change your views and outputs. But it's about education, it's about understanding. I mean, I admit myself, you know, even for me, I learned a lot spending time with these families that I didn't necessarily know or appreciate, you know, and I think for all of us, it's about, you know, getting a better understanding of how everybody is.
That's really what it's all about. I mean, that's what you're trying to do in your film. That's what we're trying to do with this show. But unless you have lived in this kind of poverty, unless you experience it firsthand day in and day out and feel the pressure of worrying about, you know, a fan belt going in your car or your transmission going and being unable to get to work on a daily basis and losing your job, it's hard for most. I mean, for the 60% to 70% of Americans who never have to deal with this, it's hard for them to relate. And that's what you're trying to do with your film.
Yeah, absolutely. And the best way I could relate it is that for any middle-class person who has been hit by a hurricane or a tornado or, you know, has been flooded out, you know, where suddenly their lovely life and area is just taken away. You know, I always say it's likening poverty is a bit like being hit by a tsunami, because every day you're thinking, how do I eat? How do I shelter? How do I clothe? You know, you're making choices about, you know, more food or electric, you know, warmth or hunger, you know, where, and that's hard to get across. You know, it's hard for any of us to fully appreciate that. But, you know, that is the reality, is that these decisions and are being made on a daily basis, which obviously creates a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. And I think on a health issue, that's one of the big worries for children who are growing up in poorer families, is that, you know, kids are like sponges. They feed on us, right? Yeah. And so if we're educating them or teaching them, they feed off that education and teaching. So if you're a parent that's very proactive with your child, they'll learn better. They will, because you're involved, you're active, you're helping. Well, the same thing is if we're angry or we're stressed, you know, they'll feed off that. I'm sure many parents realize that if you shout at your kid, they just shout louder. You know, they understand these behaviors and they receive them, you know. And so I think when they feed off their parents' stress. And so there is a lot of mental health issues or sort of challenges kids are facing now. And with this homeschooling as well, it's really, really hard, which is what plays out in Lakin's story, is, you know, the poor kid is already struggling with ADHD. So she has attention problems. She has, you know, she has a difficulty focusing and having attention. School gave her that structure that she needs. She needs that structure. And you know, we always, you know, we always push back at the ones we love the most, right? So you're always going to push back at a mother or a partner or whatever. That's, you know, that's what we do, isn't it, as human beings? Mm-hmm. And so you need that teacher structure. And when you don't have it, particularly for a child like Lakin, you know, how is she supposed to study? How is she supposed to survive? And then obviously she misses it. So I think that's another health issue that's coming through in a big way during the pandemic is anxiety, stress, is depression amongst children.
We're talking about poverty through the eyes of children with filmmaker Jezza Newman. His documentary Growing Up Poor in America premieres tonight on PBS WOSU-TV at 9, tells the story of poverty through the eyes of three children and their families here in Ohio. It's part of a series of documentaries PBS is doing this fall in the run-up to the presidential election, which is now less than 2 months away. Joining us by phone is Tracy Naheda. She is Executive Director of Children's Defense Fund Ohio. Tracy, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also, Dr. Ray Bignall is a physician specialist at Nationwide Children's Hospital. His academic interests include social determinants of health, population health, and health disparities. Dr. Bignall, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me.
Tracy, let's start with you. As you direct the Children's Defense Fund of Ohio, what was the situation with regards to poverty in Ohio pre-pandemic, and then how has the pandemic affected the situation?
Well, pre-pandemic, as a state, we've actually been doing better year over year, and that's been a continuing trend. One in five, prior to the pandemic, one in five children in the state were experiencing poverty. And the Appalachian region of our state, it was closer to one in four. But also just keep in mind, I mean, though the rates have been improving and more children and families were moving out of poverty, that's still not an acceptable state of affairs here. That still means that we have quite a number of children, 500,000, who are living in poverty day to day, and experiencing those very things that Jeza was describing earlier, where they're living in families that are overly stressed. They're trying to make impossible or being forced to make impossible choices between food, health care, a roof over their heads, and, you know, only one, you know, emergency away from really being homeless. So this is the everyday situation for many in our communities.
Yeah, when you look at those numbers, one in five, it's 20%, one in five. You know, one in four is 25%. That's still a high number, and it's considered, you know, relatively good, I guess. I hate the words used good there, but better than it was, I guess. Then the pandemic hit, and as we've discussed on this program right now, that The folks who were hit first were folks who work in restaurants and service industries, bars, hotels, cleaning offices, and offices were empty. What happened then?
So one thing to keep in mind here also, just as in the context of the economics of the state, is many of our fastest growing segments of our economy here in Ohio were in those low wage jobs. So when we talk about people, you know, slightly emerging out of poverty, you know, they're right there on the cusp, but they're working in many of these jobs. And when they lost their income, many of them lost, you know, any kind of, you know, access to, you know, food or healthcare or, you know, other things that they were able to pay for barely. So it became, I think it became like an emergency situation for so many. And, you know, a lot of the programs that have flowed from the state, like the unemployment compensation and the federal government, I think that those were very, very helpful in terms of, you know, keeping those families somewhat afloat. But I mean, when you talk about not having a safety net, not having a savings account, any disruption really in any flow of income is, I mean, it becomes an emergency situation for them.
Dr. Ray Bignell from the Children's Hospital. Dr. Bignell, of course, when you lose your job, many times you lose your health insurance. Mm-hmm. And a global pandemic is not a time to be losing your health insurance. No time is a good time to lose your health insurance, of course, but especially now where, you know, you want to keep on top of your health, you want to get tested, you want to, you know, keep on top of any symptoms you may feel. What have you seen?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question. I think one of the things that we can be fortunate about here in the state of Ohio, similar to what Dr. Njero is pointing out, is that Ohio actually has relatively high rates of childhood health insurance coverage, thanks in large part to the efforts of our children's hospitals and our pediatric practices across the state to encourage participation in the State Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, mm-hmm. Which many of your listeners may be familiar with. Unfortunately, in recent years, owed in part to some of the confusion around the state of health care more generally politically, we've seen across the country uninsurance rates increase for children the first time in at least a decade, which is a concerning trend for us. And certainly the issues brought about by families and parents losing employee-sponsored health insurance has made keeping consistent health care insurance for children an added challenge during this pandemic as well.
Yeah, the expansion of Medicaid by former Governor Kasich also has probably helped keep families, low-income families, insured as well, even during this pandemic.
Yes, that's absolutely right. There's plenty of evidence to show that when parents have health insurance, their children are more likely to have health insurance. And obviously, healthy parents are essential to having healthy children in our state and elsewhere around the country.
Jason Newman from the documentary Growing Up Poor in America. Describe how health care affected the families you profiled and how that fit into their budget, how they were coping with health insurance and taking care of their medical needs.
Well, the it varied between the families about whether they had Medicaid or not, but it's also the but most of the kids were covered. It was then about the parents, but also it was the expense of the amount you had to pay before insurance kicked in, and so some for a lot of families that we met as well, not just the ones we featured. You know, the kids were on the Medicaid program, so they were all right, but the parents didn't. They had one family I knew had, you know, the excesses were massive. So they were terrified of getting sick and would avoid going into hospital for a checkup because even a $150, $300 bill was too much for them. And then what really happened in the pandemic, I think, is that they struggled to get appointments. And so whilst they had the Medicaid, for Kaya's family, for example, they had issues with her teeth and also they needed eye appointments. But because they can only go to certain providers, you know, there were massive wait lists. You know, I filmed her on the phone and they were being told, you know, October. So, you know, that's another issue because, you know, what, you know, who knows what's happened to her teeth by the time she gets to see a dentist. So I think that's another, you know, issue that's built into it.
Yeah.
But I would say on the Medicaid side, it's a lifesaver for these children.
Yeah, these families, I assume, are not doing a whole lot of telehealth, whether it's because of a lack of a broadband access or lack of computers. And these folks are not like your average suburbanite who can just, you know, flip on his laptop or her laptop and visit the doctor that way.
Right. And this is
Sorry.
Go ahead, Jezza, and then we'll get to you, Tracy.
So I was going to say, I'll just be quick so Tracy can speak. I was just going to say no, and most of them working on laptops, and then also with all the closures, there's a lot of people in this region who relied on libraries to go and use the internet, and that all went when it got shut down. I mean, thankfully, schools have been phenomenal in this area, and I know some schools have set up hotspots in car parks because they know they've gone from elsewhere. And you see at the beginning of the film, schools have been delivering food, et cetera, to these families. But in terms of their health, it's like every layer of what they're trying to do, even unemployment. Yes, they might be able to get to, you know, be eligible for some unemployment, but knowing how to get it, which one, how to get it. And I've witnessed families on the phone for hours and hours and hours trying to get through to someone to discuss the application they made and not getting anywhere.
Yes. Tracy Naheda from the Children's Defense Fund of Ohio, you wanted to weigh in on access to health care.
Correct. So, Dr. Bignola is correct. I mean, Ohio does have a fairly high rate of child health coverage through Medicaid CHIP. In the last 2 years, we've seen one of the nation's largest spikes in terms of children dropping off that program here in Ohio, which is something that we're looking closely at. But something in particular, though, especially for southeastern Ohio, is regardless of how, you know, great our coverage rates are, we are living in those areas in a healthcare desert. You know, there's not enough healthcare providers to begin with. And this was pre-pandemic. So when you think about post, with all these different doctor's offices, you know, closed or restricting appointments or maybe going to telehealth, you know, we have such a high rate of individuals in that region. I've seen upwards of 30% who don't have access to broadband or to, you know, devices to access it. So even if they were able to do telehealth or some other, you know, option, I mean, that isn't available. So there's some systemic issues and infrastructure issues within, you know, that 32 county swath of Appalachia that must be addressed, you know, for everything from behavioral health, mental health, physical health. We talked about oral health a moment ago, and that's a huge issue in our Appalachian region, especially amongst children. So we have some significant health disparities, depending not only, you know, what your income is, but where you live in this state.
Yes, COVID-19, the pandemic certainly has cast a spotlight on many segments of our society, which needs some help. The pandemic has definitely shown the disparities in healthcare and income and work. In all the warts that are associated with all those things are in full display during this pandemic. When we come back, we'll talk about mental health for children, dealing with poverty, dealing with the pandemic, dealing with the increasing tensions over race. When All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about poverty in Ohio through the eyes of children, and it is a serious problem. Before the pandemic, and the pandemic has only highlighted the issues faced by many families around Ohio, with us is Jezza Newman, award-winning filmmaker, whose latest film is Growing Up Poor in America, premieres tonight on WOSU-TV and PBS. It's part of the Frontline series. Also, Tracy Naheda is Executive Director of Children's Defense Fund Ohio, and Dr. Ray Bignell from Children's Hospital. He works on social determinants of health, population health, and health disparities. Jezza Newman, talk about the emotional health of the children that you profiled, their mental health, and how they were coping with the stresses of poverty and the stresses of the pandemic.
I think that what I saw was high levels of anxiety and also loneliness in terms of missing their peer groups and their friends. So the anxiety was brought around by the worries of the virus, the worries of the sickness, the mixture of messages they were getting about how deadly it was or wasn't. Also the fact that their mothers were still out there, either looking for work or working, or as you heard, you know, doing their hours for their benefit. So there was all these multitude of worries. And then at the same time, the homeschooling was incredibly difficult on them. You know, for the kids, it was one thing trying to access the computers. And as we know, no school was expecting this. So, you know, the beginning of the end of the school, so to speak, you know, it wasn't the smoothest, you know, machine getting laptops out for those that could get them, or paperwork for the kids that just worked on paper. So for the kids, it was trying to work out how to get this homework done. And then for the parents, you know, not really understanding how to teach, you know, yeah. They're not trained teachers.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So
none of us
this,
are. Even if, you, even if that means you're not trained as a teacher. And,
And then it was missing the peer group. I mean, you know, I know that for these kids, you know, that kids need to be surrounded by their peers because their peers are like-minded. They think the same. You know, yes, you can go and spend time with your 12-year-old and have fun and build Lego or whatever it is you choose to do with them. But the reality is you're still a 40 or something or 30 something parent. You're not 12. So you do think differently. You will talk about things differently. You won't talk in a 12-year-old world or a 14-year-old world or whichever world they're in. And I think that really comes through when the kids don't get to go to school, because school is also about being in their world of their age group.
Yeah, you don't have to be an adult when you're hanging with your buddies in the school or the playground or, you know, before and after school. So it can alleviate some of the stress of being in poverty if you can hang out with your buddies and your friends and do whatever. Dr. Bignell from Children's Hospital, what are the, speaking broadly on coping with poverty and growing up in poverty, what are the emotional and developmental consequences for these kids?
Yeah, well, this can be absolutely tremendous. You know, I'm struck by the conversation talking about schools. One of the concerns, significant concerns that we've had in the pediatric community, not just here in Ohio, but across the country, is just, you know, school is often an escape for many children who live in poverty and those who may be in part because of the social or stress-filled dynamics of their home. Home is not a safe place for them. And very often, we as pediatricians are worried about children's physical, emotional safety, and unfortunately, in some cases, sexual safety, if they are in unsafe home environments and spending a greater percentage of that time in an unsafe home environment, in part due to this pandemic. The impact of kids lacking social connectivity, emotional well-being that comes and the development of their emotional well-being that comes by spending time with their peer group, spending time in school, learning in an environment that is different from their home environment is really quite tremendous. Many of these elements can be perhaps poorly, but in some degree replicated if you have the means to do that. In my suburban community, I see kids playing in, you know, rec league soccer with socially distant parent fans on the sidelines. But many of these sort of recreational outlets are unavailable to children who grow up in poverty. And so it really is incumbent upon us as pediatricians to be vigilant about this. And it's one of the reasons why it's been so challenging for us as physicians, pediatricians especially, who know that school is such an important part of our children's developmental life, to also be forced to say that perhaps school is not a safe place to return to right now in the midst of a pandemic, and when nationally we lack a coherent and cohesive strategy for decreasing cases around the country.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bignell, the pandemic obviously has highlighted all of this stuff, but I mean, the documentary Growing Up Poor shows these kids really having to take on very adult responsibilities, having mm-hmm. adult fears, adult anxiety, having to care for toddler siblings, having to navigate life really as someone who is 20, 25 years old. What does that do for their developmental well-being down the road?
Yeah, children need to be children. And it's very difficult, very challenging for children who are forced to grow up early. You can often see that these kids become maladjusted when navigating the world as an adult. Many of these children are ill-equipped to handle the tremendous responsibilities that are forced upon them by no fault of their own, and often really no fault of their parents either. It's the circumstances that they've been dealt and their caregivers, most of whom are tremendously well-meaning and are doing the best that they can, find themselves in this predicament. You know, I am a pediatric nephrologist by trade, and I see children all the time in my pediatric practice who are responsible for managing their own medications. These are children who, at their age, you know, I was still struggling to write my homework down in my planner before I came home from school. To expect children, school-age children, to manage the medications for their chronic kidney disease by themselves while their parents are working hard to make money to help make ends meet, you know, as Jez's work shows so well, I think that we in society need to be very, very aware of the challenges that these families face. It's part of the reason why work like this documentary is so important, because folks in the community, people like me who live a relatively privileged life, need to be appreciative and understanding of some of the challenges that are faced by other members in our community who don't have, they don't have the same privileges that we do. And the impact that can have not only on adults in this pandemic environment especially, but on children as well.
We're talking about growing up poor, children in poverty in Ohio. The reason why we're talking about it today is there's a documentary tonight on WOSU-TV. It's a PBS Frontline documentary, Growing Up Poor. Filmmaker Jezza Newman is the director of the film. We're talking with him and two other experts about poverty here in Central Ohio. I want to get to geography here. Jezza, you profiled, you know, kids from Columbus, our family from Columbus, and also southeastern Ohio. Any difference? I mean, we talked about access to healthcare a little bit was a difference. Transportation can be a difference. But I'm talking about how these families deal with their situation. Was there a difference between the family in Appalachia and a family in the city of Columbus?
I think the fundamental issues that these families face are nationwide, and that's why when I try to tell these stories, ideally you want to tell it from somewhere that wouldn't be your first pin on a map for poverty in America. There are places that are far poorer than the cities or the towns we went to, but all these places are representative of the country as a whole. And I think that's what people need to remember. This isn't just about Ohio. This is about every state in America that has families in these situations or situations like them. And what we try to do is try and get a cross section of different issues that they face. So obviously in Columbus, there is a bit more job opportunity, but yet still for the family, housing is a major issue because obviously rents are more expensive and trying to get into schools. You know, in Appalachia, obviously here, you know, transportation is a big issue. And in Marietta, the other place we're at, you know, it's kind of, it's a town that seems to have, you know, a great amount of wealth on one side of the river and a lot of poverty on the other side of the river. So whichever side of the river you're born on kind of tells you your future. And I think what we're trying to look at, and also in the terms of the family structure, you know, you've got Fantasy, who is a working mum. She works in a gas station. She's, you know, a hardworking American who still needs food stamps to survive, who still is getting electric cutoff notices, whose washing machine dies in the middle of an interview, you know. And I think that, you know, that's what we try to do is try to highlight a different cross-section of America and issues that people across the country are facing.
Tracy Naheda from the Children's Defense Fund Ohio. What are the additional challenges that poor families in Appalachia face compared to urban areas? What has your research found there?
Well, I think that there's a lot of different things that we need to, you know, just recognize in terms of the differences. When we think about social determinants of health, which I know Dr. Bignall is an expert in, you know, you include everything from housing to transportation to food, you know, access to all these things, right? So if you forget about poverty just for a moment, in many of our Appalachian areas, they're food deserts, they're healthcare deserts. They don't have access to broadband. There is really no public transportation to speak of. The housing, you know, in a lot of cases, the housing stock is very old. Therefore, I mean, you're already disadvantaging just by, you know, removing some of those basic necessities, you know, in terms of contributing to that child's health in many of our rural and Appalachian regions. However, I mean, that is also true for many of our inner cities at the same time, where you have certain, you know, census tracts and communities within Columbus, Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, that are food deserts also, that lack any kind of, there might be public transportation, but it might take 2 hours to get to the doctor's office. So, you know, there are some similarities and, you know, there's also some differences, but something that was mentioned earlier, I want to return to and around education and emotional health, right? Behavioral health of many of our young people, you know, school is a refuge. School is where a lot of times they see the school nurse, you know, to manage some of their chronic conditions, or where they have a guidance counselor, or teacher, or caring adult that they can speak to, or where you have those required reporters, right, for abuse and neglect, mandated reporters that have their eyes on children and can see, you know, what's going on with them emotionally. And when this pandemic hit, we lost so much of that. So in terms of, you know, children's health, mental health, we're really at a disadvantage at this moment. And I think that, you know, there's been some news articles about that's probably why we're seeing increases in more severe cases of abuse and neglect amongst children. Because, you know, you don't have those adults, you know, keeping an eye on them like you did before through sports or school or other activities. And a piece of data that we really need to keep an eye on right now, especially, is our chronic absenteeism data. You know, with many schools going hybrid and going remote, making sure that children are somewhat are engaged and they're having that one-on-one with teachers and other peers. I mean, that's going to be difficult, but it's really needed. I'm sure many of you remember this last fall, but a report was released from the Ohio Department of Health that showed that suicide was the leading cause of death for many of our youth between the ages of 10 and 14. So we need to make sure that they're engaged. We need to make sure that they're safe emotionally and, you know, that they have those caring adults and other peers that can reach out to them.
Jessa Newman, just a couple minutes left here. What's the main takeaway? You did this before. You did another documentary, similar documentary in 2012. What's your main takeaway, having done this now twice, you know, 8 years apart, on the situation of poverty and how it's affecting kids?
Well, I think one big issue is that, and this is, you know, the UK as well. This is an American phenomenon. Is that a lot of times politicians are looking at short-term fixes that are set around, you know, re-elections, et cetera. And I think this really needs someone being brave. And there are people doing this. There are organizations doing this, but it needs to be not just, you know, nonprofits and other organizations supporting this. It needs to be on a state level too and a national level, you know, looking at it long-term, looking at the 15, 20-year plan, you know, thinking about these kids when they're, you know, first starting school, through to when they're ultimately going to university. And how do we get them there? How does someone like Miracle, who's in the film, truly be the first generation to go to university? And yes, a university isn't necessarily the ultimate place for everybody, and there are other ways to create a life for yourself. But the reality is, with education comes choice. All right. And wouldn't it be better that Miracle could choose to work in a gas station because it suits her life, then she's forced to work in a gas station because it's the only choice she has.
All right. Jessa Newman, award-winning documentary. His documentary comes up tonight on PBS and WOSU-TV, Growing Up Poor. Thanks to him, Tracy Naheda, and Dr. Bignall from Children's Hospital. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.